Delilah? Yes, I mean Delilah. Who else would I be talking about? What was she like? What difference does it make? Decker kept his voice even. She's a ghost, Cameron. I want to find her humanity. What was she like? He looked chastened. She was fun. He looked down. A lot of fun. He looked back up. It was nothing serious. Just a college thing for both of us. So what did you two like to do together? Snow looked at McAdams. Can you help me out here? I think Detective Decker is asking about attraction other than sex, McAdams said. If I had to quantify it, I'd say 90% was sex. The other 10% was the stuff leading up to the sex. Drinking, partying, having fun. She was a party girl. She was good in bed. She was my consistent booty call. He shook his head. I know that sounds rough, but like I said, it wasn't serious. Decker said, if it wasn't serious, what did you two fight about that night? I don't even remember. That's not true, Decker said. I've been doing this for a while, Cameron. Memories get hazy, but you wouldn't forget the harsh words exchanged right before she disappeared. The young man looked at the ceiling. Then he poured himself a glass of water and drank it. He plopped the paper cup down. I just know that we fought about something. I don't remember too well because I was drunk at the time. I'm waiting, son, Decker said. I've got all the time in the world. A long pause. Snow said, You cannot judge me, all right? Fair enough, Decker said. I suggested a threesome. It pissed her off. McAdams held up a hand as he rooted through his notes. You were with a bunch of guys all night, it says here. Exactly. McAdams looked him in the eye. So how did you decide who the other guy was? Snow blushed and looked away. I don't know what you mean. What I mean is a party girl may not balk at a threesome, but she might balk at a gangbang. No one spoke. Finally, Snow said, Whatever. No, not whatever, Decker said. He's bringing up a pertinent point. Maybe one of your buddies got excited and didn't want to take no for an answer. Look, Detective, all I know is that she left and I wasn't about to go chasing after her. In retrospect, I wish I had. None of this would have happened if I had been there. Maybe one of your buddies went after her. Anything's possible, but I don't remember. I told you I was pissed drunk. If you had to guess which one it would be, who would you name? Snow shook his head. No clue. When no one spoke, he looked down. What a fucking nightmare. Tell me how you spent the rest of your night, Decker asked. It's all there in the files. I make my own notes, son. What did you do the rest of the night? God, The group of us took the party back to Casey's dorm. That would be Casey Halpern, Decker said. So you read the file. What do you need me for? Go on. It was just the usual college shit. We were drinking in Casey's room. His roommate Marcus was there. Marcus Craven, Reuters said. Yeah, Marcus Craven, Snow said. Started out pretty crowded, but eventually it just wore itself out. People began pairing off. I was with Eloise Braggin until like 5 in the morning. She graduated, but she vouched for me then, and she'll vouch for me now. Can I go? No, let me rephrase this. I have things to do. I'm gonna go now. He stood up but didn't move. Really, this is a waste of... Sit down, Cameron, Decker told him. Bear with us. You owe Delilah that much. Snow remained rooted. What did you think when you found out Delilah was missing? I don't know. He was still standing, but the question caused him to wilt. He sat down. I thought maybe she just had enough. Enough of what? McAdams asked. Snow looked at Tyler. You know. No, I don't know. There was a pause as Snow tried to find the right words. College is hard for some people. Did she tell you it was hard for her? Yes, she did, and more than one time. Deep down, she was a lonely girl. She missed home. When she disappeared, I thought she just wanted to get away. I felt guilty that I may have pushed her over. He shook his head. I know it sounds self-centered, but I was traumatized. I took a year off because I couldn't concentrate. I kept thinking, like, how could this happen?
Did you come up with any answers? Reuters asked.
None then, none now. Snow was pensive. But it affected me. I really got my shit together after it happened. I went home and started a business. Then I sold my share for $15,000 and came back with an entirely different perspective toward my life. I'm not the same man who started college 3 years ago. What kind of business? McAdams asked. Huh? He shrugged. Oh, we started an emergency daycare service. I had a list of licensed daycare centers all over Greater Atlanta, and mothers would call me up in a panic. I'd call my sources and find a daycare center in their area that was willing to take the baby for the day. That's a good idea, McAdams said. Yeah, I do have a brain.
No one implied you didn't have a brain, Decker said. Who was your partner in this homespun business?
You're really nosy,
Reuters said. Just answer the question, Cameron.
Snow's smile was fleeting, but it was definitely there. Her name is Priscilla Hardy. She's a housewife with three kids. She lives on my parents' block. We got to talking one day, and a business was born.
Got to talking one day.
Horny boy meets frustrated housewife? Decker would give her a call. Maybe the kid let something slip in pillow talk.
Snow was still bragging and whining.
Saying that I came back to Morse McKinley with goals, something I was lacking when I first started. The whole mess really put everything in focus. I'm applying to Wharton and Harvard for an MBA. I don't know if I'll get in, but with all my experience, including my life experiences, I think I have something. I'd like to put this whole mess behind me so I can concentrate on the future.
Reuters said, I would think the best way to put the mess behind you is to find out what happened to Delilah.
Snow pinkened. Yes, of course. But that's your job, not mine. I have to live my own life. I have to push forward.
He checked his watch and drummed his finger again. I really do have a couple of tests to study for, so if we're done...
Decker looked at Reuters, who said,
We've got some leads with this new development. We'll be in touch, Cameron. Don't go anywhere without letting us know.
I'm not going anywhere.
The boy wiped sweat off his face.
You're totally wrong if you think I'm involved. I had nothing to do with it. Just ask Eloise Braggin.
I'll do that. Decker gave the boy his card. If you do think of anything, give me a call.
Snow flipped it over between his fingers.
Can I go?
Reuters gave him a nod and the boy left. A moment later, Decker turned to McAdams.
Go follow him.
Now?
Of course now. I want to see what he's up to.
What makes you think he's up to anything?
A group of buddies who are as drunk as you are isn't an alibi. Go.
McAdams got up and left the room.
Reuters said, I always felt that the kid had blood on his hands.
I hear you. But the thing is, Cameron wasn't around when Yvette Jones went to Morse McKinley.
If Delilah is victim number three, we can't have three independent murders with all the bodies buried in the same location.
Your guess is as good as mine,
Reuters said. We should wait until the newest bones are ID'd. We might get surprised.
Right.
How many people do you have that were around when all three murders took place?
20, I believe. The list includes not only teachers at the colleges, but people who worked in the bookstore or at the local bar or in administration.
So it's not 20 students?
No, no. Rena made some phone calls this morning. I'm going to talk today to an econ teacher named Hank Carter. He was on your list of Delilah's teachers. You checked him off, so he must have had an alibi.
Reuters paused. I don't remember him or his alibi. Delilah took his intro to econ class. So did Pettigrew. And Yvette Jones had attended his lecture the night she disappeared. Plus, she had him for a teacher. After him, I have a potential interview with a guy named Jason Kramer. I talked to him initially regarding Pettigrew. He's involved with the LGBT Center, and he taught intro to psych. Both Delilah and Yvette had his class as well. And Pettigrew? No, but he knew Pettigrew, so that's enough to put him on the all three list. He was also checked off your list for Delilah. Sorry, I suppose I should have put the alibi next to each name, but there were like, what, 100 names? I know. You want to be as concise as possible, because the file becomes very long. You questioned them. I'm sure they remember you. I'm glad we're looking into this again. Reuters stood up. You're looking into it. A fresh set of eyes. Having identified bodies makes a huge difference. Yeah, it does. Look, Deck, I'm going to say this out loud. Don't be concerned about stepping on my toes. If I fucked up, that's my bad, not yours. I didn't see anything missing in the file, Ben. We've all had open cases. Just do what you have to do, Deck. I'm not about the ego. I'm all about the solve. Chapter 16. So what can I do for you? Hank Carter's face registered concern. His light eyes narrowed, and his forehead became a series of lines like windswept sand. He was in his 50s and lanky with thick gray hair. I'm assuming it's about Bogart Trail. It is, Reuters said. We're asking for help. Please sit. Thank you, Decker said. He gave a once-over to his surroundings. Carter had tenure and seniority, and as a result, he had a decent-sized office. The space was ample enough to hold a large desk, a couch, and scattered chairs. They were on the fourth floor of Barrett Hall, which held most of the econ poli-sci government classes. The window overlooked the Morse McKinley Quad, students spread out on the lawn, basking in the last glows of summer. It was in the low 70s with a lemon sun and a perfect blue sky. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So how can I help? Carter asked. Reuters said, I was the primary investigator on the Delilah Oakham case. Yes, that's right, Carter nodded. I remember you. We're just going over all missing person cases in the area for the last 10 years. Delilah Oakham is the most recent. We're reviewing every name in her file. Why am I in her file in the first place? Delilah took your intro to economics class. That's probably the largest class in the school. I usually have around 350 students each term. I don't recall her at all, Decker said. But you remember when she disappeared? Of course. How many times do students just disappear? Do you remember where you were the night she disappeared? We're asking everyone we interviewed 3 years ago the same question. No, I don't remember. I can check my calendar. It's all online, and I'm sure it goes back that far. Please, Reuters gave him the date. Carter swiveled his desk chair toward his computer, clicking the keys as he stared at the monitor, giving Decker a chance to check over his wall's worth of diplomas. Penn Wharton, undergrad. Yale grad with an LLD and an MBA in economics and business. He was a member of lots of professional societies. He had been given lots of professional awards. Okay, I taught in the morning. I don't know what I did between 12 and 2, maybe lunch. I had scheduled appointments at 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. Open door for students 4 to 6. Then I had cocktails with one of my colleagues at 5. Unfortunately, she is no longer with the colleges, but her name is Nancy Halloran. He looked up and swiveled toward them. I probably went home after that and stayed in all evening because I don't have anything else on my schedule. Decker was writing as Carter spoke. As long as you have your calendar, can you look up this date for me? It's around 5 years ago. Why? Suspicion in his voice. Decker said. Another Morse McKinley student disappeared, although he wasn't a student at the time. He came up from New York City for a visit to the colleges, and that was the last that anyone had heard from him. Who was this? Lawrence Pettigrew. And you're asking me about him because... He took your government and ethics course. Okay. Carter was quiet. So you must not have identified anyone specific at Bogart Trail. He paused. But surely you know if it's a man or a woman, Decker said. Could you look at your calendar, please? I thought you needed help. We'll get to that soon enough. Can you bring up the date? Carter moved like a reluctant man. But he cooperated, checking with his computer once again. Yes, I do have my appointments for that date as well. I taught in the morning, student hours in the afternoon. Nothing scheduled for the evening, but that doesn't mean that my wife and I didn't go out for dinner or to the movies. How many students are in your government and ethics course? Around 100. I don't remember Lawrence Pettigrew. He was distinctive, Decker told him. He was very tall and very thin and very dramatic. Long blonde hair, loud jackets that didn't match his loud pants. He also dressed with lots of scarves. Of course, Carter hit his head. He was a very smart guy. Despite the get-up, he knew the material and asked very intelligent questions. If you hold on, I'll see if I still have the roster for that class. No, sorry, he looked up. My rosters don't go back that far. But you can check with the administration. I believe I gave him an A. Like I told you, he was bright. You never saw him again after the class?
I'd see him walking around campus.
One more person I'd like you to look up, Decker said. Yvette Jones. Wow, I haven't heard that name in a while. When did she disappear? About 7 years ago, Carter said. Don't tell me. She was in one of my classes as well, Reuters said. Also intro to economics. She was last seen attending one of your lectures, Decker said. Investment for the socially conscious.
That would be me, Carter said. Obviously, then, you know where I was when she disappeared. I was at my talk. He laughed.
Look, gentlemen, after my talks, I am always deluged with people. It usually takes me at least a half hour to clear the auditorium.
She could have waited around for you, Reuters said.
It's just for process of elimination, Dr. Carter, Decker said. I'm sorry to bother you.
Detective, I wouldn't know Yvette Jones if I met her face to face.
A pause.
By your questions, you obviously think that all three cases are related.
We're exploring all the possibilities. Carter tented his hands.
Am I the only one on your list who had all three students in their classes?
No, not at all, Decker said. There are others, but we have to start somewhere.
Why all the questions now? Why not when Delia disappeared?
Delilah, Decker corrected. We found evidence to re-examine all three cases.
So you found more than one body at Bogart?
A pause, almost an afterthought. Terrible business you're involved in.
Someone has to do it, Reuters said.
Well, I hope you get somewhere this time. It must be frustrating for you to have open cases that go nowhere.
Decker felt the dig, but Carter was just winding up.
Furthermore, it must be hell on the parents, not knowing about their children. You must get blamed for things beyond your control.
Decker said,
Most people recognize that we're doing all we can. Too bad that sometimes it's not enough.
You're right, Decker said evenly. It sucks to fail.
The statement took Carter by surprise. He switched gears and shook his head somberly. Is there something else I can do for you? As I said, I don't remember the girls, but I do remember the young man.
That's why we're here talking to you, trying to jog your memory.
Wish I could help, but the man had tuned out. Decker gave him his card, and Reuters followed suit.
If you think of anything at all, no matter how trivial, give us a call.
I will.
Carter laid the cards on his desk.
I wish you luck.
Thank you.
The two men walked out of the office and through Barrett Hall, thin with students because it was Sunday. The boys, they spotted, were tall and patrician. Morse McKinley was noted for having a good-looking male population. They aspired to be future bankers, venture capitalists, and hedge fund directors. A few of them would end up as fraudsters and felons. Whenever big money is involved, the two things go hand in hand.
What did you think? Reuters asked Decker.
I think the cards will end up in the trash. I didn't like his little jibes at me or police work. Plus, he didn't seem nervous.
Maybe there's no reason for him to be nervous. On the surface, it doesn't look like he had much contact with them.
He called Delilah Delia.
I noticed, Reuters said. A simple mistake?
Doubt it. I mentioned her name at least twice.
I think it was three times.
Why get the wrong name unless you want to distance yourself from the victim?
Decker exhaled.
Not many suspects, Ben. I'm not saying that Carter is up there with Snow, but his smugness has put him on my radar.
McAdams said, Snow has been in his dorm for over an hour. Do you want me to sit here all night?
Decker spoke into his cell. Where are you?
I'm under an outside gazebo on my third cup of tea trying to look busy, but I'm the only one out here.
Where did Cameron go when he left the station house?
Hold on, let me... Okay.
First he went to the dining hall to grab dinner. He joined a table of four guys. They had lunch together, and he seemed to be doing most of the talking, or rather ranting, probably the prick police and the interview. But I wasn't close enough to hear.
Do you know who the guys were?
No, but I took pictures. I had to sneak in there, you know. I guess I looked like I belonged. Anyway, an hour later, three of the four guys left, and it was just Snow and another dude. I took more pictures. They talked for about 20 minutes, and then I followed Snow to his dorm, which has three entrances. I parked myself to guard the main one, but so far nothing. I can't guarantee you that my eyes have been glued to the door the past 2 hours. I left for the facilities and to rewarm my tea. Now you're up to date.
Okay, Harvard, call it a day.
Where are you?
At the station house, writing up the interview with Hank Carter.
Anything?
He doesn't remember the girls, but he did remember Pettigrew once I described him. Other than that, he didn't add much. I have a feeling that it's going to be that way with all our interviews. It's been a while. Innocent people forget. Guilty people don't talk.
Is Carter crossed off the list?
Not yet. I didn't like him. He seemed shifty, but that isn't indictable. Go home.
Thanks. Should I come to the station house or to your house?
Don't you have your own apartment, kid?
I shipped my clothing to Cambridge and my fridge is empty. I'm living out of my suitcase.
Pick up dinner. It's the least you can do.
What is wrong with you? Did you miss your nap?
Decker laughed. Go to Pita Delight and get some falafel, Israeli salad, tabbouleh salad, and spiced carrots. And also get hummus, tahini, and baba ganoush.
Can you repeat the order now that I have a pencil and paper?
Decker did. He added, also get some slaw. Rena likes the slaw. We have some leftover chicken. Between all that, we should have enough for dinner.
For anyone else except Jews, it's enough for a party.
Now, now, Decker said. I can say that. You can't.
Of course I can. I'm your honorary son, and that makes me an honorary Jew.
Are you sure you want that?
Listen, old man, I've been alienated all my life. I might as well have an excuse for it.
Chapter 17.
We got the report back from the forensic odontologist. Radar was talking over the phone. It's Oakham, expected, although it could have been that clerk at the gas mart.
Aaron Young. Decker had papers spread out at the dining room table. He picked up one of the folders from her file box. She disappeared about a year after Pettigrew. I can't seem to work her into the puzzle.
Maybe she's not part of it. She wasn't a student, correct?
Correct. She was a local, and she was older.
We'll keep digging for a few more days before we pull back. Last thing I want is to miss something. If you want, I'll make Oakham's notification. I'm going to call her parents anyway.
No, I'll do the notification, Decker said. I just got off the phone with Karen. She interviewed Oakham's best friend, Emily Crowler, who wasn't at the party. She wasn't even in town. She had gone home because she had a massive allergic reaction to an insect bite. Didn't show up until the following Monday. I've crossed her off the list.
Anything else I should be aware of?
No, not so far, Decker said. Mike, regardless of what you find out there, I want to reopen Erin Young's file. If her parents see us working the other three cases and not hers, they're going to be rightfully upset. Even though we haven't found her body, I don't want anyone who lives here to think that college students are more important than the locals.
There was just a single mother. Her name was Corrine. Erin didn't live with her, but there was contact between them.
Jerry Plains was the detective on the case. He retired to Florida about 2.5 years ago. Did you ever meet him?
No, because I replaced him.
Yeah, right. I believe Erin went missing 4 years ago. For all I know, Erin could have made contact with her mother, and the old woman forgot to tell us.
If Erin hasn't contacted her, do you think Corrine might have hired a private investigator?
That's what they usually do when we crap out.
But in this case, Corrine had a drug problem and not a lot of disposable income. I don't see how she could have afforded one.
Do you have the coroner's report for Yvette Jones?
Not yet. It'll probably be in tomorrow.
What about Oakham?
Nothing yet.
I also expect that soon. If we don't make some headway on this, I'm going to have to fan out to other police departments. It's possible our killer moved on after Bogat was opened as a public trail.
Radar paused.
I'll contact Boston and New York. They both have a lot of colleges and universities. They both also have a lot more crime and missing person cases compared to our little department.
You're right about that, Decker said. This thing is like a tsunami. Rarely comes, but when it does, it just drowns out everything.
Decker, Rena, and McAdams spent early Sunday evening going through the roster of the names that intersected all three students. A handful of people on the list had died. Others had moved away. The updated list included two who worked administration for Morse McKinley, including Leo Riggins, whom Decker met a few days ago while trying to track down Lawrence Pettigrew. There were three students who started as freshmen when Yvette went missing and were now finishing up MBAs in the MM Graduate School. On the list were also five teachers, including Hank Carter and Jason Kramer, the psychology professor associated with the LGBT Center who routed them to Lawrence Pettigrew. Others included a clerk who manned the MM bookstore, an MM librarian, and two dining hall servers, two bartenders who worked at places off campus, and Henry King, who was close to 90 and owned the local Army Surplus and More retail outlet next to the Burger Haven. Decker hung up the phone. That was Priscilla Hardy.
Who? Rena asked. Cameron Snow's former partner. They started a business when he took a leave of absence from school.
What did she say? McAdams asked.
That he was a nice kid, that he was haunted by Delilah's death. Decker made a face.
Did he seem haunted to you?
No, but college boys hide their emotions except anger and horniness. McAdams was looking at his list of names. Ricardo Diaz is a bartender at the College Grill, the gastro pub on Yale. He was in town when Pettigrew, Aaron Young, and Delilah Oakham disappeared.
What about Yvette Jones?
I don't know. We should ask him. Do you think he might still be on tonight?
Go for it, Decker said.
McAdams picked up the phone and was met with success. The place closes early on Sunday. Diaz is off at 9. Rena said,
You've got over an hour. Why don't you go down and buy a beer from him? It may make him more amenable to talking.
Good idea. Decker turned to his wife. You want to come? With you there, it'll look super casual.
Sure, I'll be your decoy. I'll get my jacket,
McAdams said. If I order booze, can I have the department pay?
What did you have in mind?
I won't go overboard. Macallan 12 is fine.
Do they even have Macallan 12?
Yes, they do.
So you've been there?
Throughout my time in this town, I have frequented a bar or two on more than my share of lonely nights. The food at the grill is mediocre, but the whiskey is plentiful and often nice.
The 12 is a little rich for the department. How about if I buy you a good luck in your second year of law school drink?
If you're buying, I'll jack it up to Macallan 18.
The bar was 20 stools separated from the grill's restaurant by a half wall. It was dimly lit and smelled of wood polish and cooking oil, probably because the kitchen was behind mirrored shelves that held dozens of liquor bottles. Not a whiff of tobacco, since the county had outlawed indoor smoking in public places. There was 30 minutes left until closing time, and last call had just been announced by the bartender. He was in his mid-30s, with straw-colored dyed hair and very dark brown eyes. Medium height with large shoulders, he wore black pants and a black long-sleeved shirt rolled up to expose tattooed arms. The three of them took stools in the corner. Decker signaled the bartender, who nodded as he set out drinks for three college-aged girls who were talking too loud and laughing too much. One of them was perched precariously on the stool, fingertips hanging on to the bar top for balance. After serving the ladies, the man came over and put down three round paper doilies with scalloped edges.
Last one of the night, folks. Make it a good one,
McAdams said.
Macallan 18. Neat,
Decker said.
Times two,
Rena said.
A Diet Coke.
The bartender smiled at her.
Sure, on the house.
You can put my drink on the house, McAdams said.
Save your parents some money, eh?
They're not my parents, not my biological parents. He presented his badge. The bartender frowned.
You're early. I'm not off for another 45 minutes.
I know, Mr. Diaz, Decker said. But there's nothing wrong with us enjoying the evening, right?
I'll get those drinks for you.
He turned and started pulling down glasses and an amber-colored bottle. A minute later, he returned, drinks in hand.
Here you are. Did you want ice, ma'am?
I'm fine, Rena said.
Lively crowd here. Is it always this busy on Sunday?
Are you a detective as well? Diaz said.
Just married to one.
The trio of girls let out a huge peal of laughter. Everyone turned around. Diaz shook his head.
Yeah, it's busy over the weekends, even on Sundays, especially on Sundays.
He cocked his head in the direction of the girls.
They're getting in their last licks.
Regulars? Decker asked.
Diaz shrugged.
I've seen them before.
He took out a rag and started to wipe down the bar top.
When this place gets jammed, it's hard to distinguish one from another unless they fall over dead drunk and make a spectacle of themselves. Even then, they'd have to do it several times before I'd take notice.
Decker said, telling me in a not-so-subtle way that you can't remember yesterday's customers, let alone someone from 4 years ago.
Maybe,
Diaz smiled. But let me see the pictures anyway. Sometimes I zero in on a face. He pointed to Rena. Like you. I'd remember you. You're older, no offense, and dressed differently than the average female student. You're also pretty.
That's my wife you're talking to, Decker said.
Facts is facts. Decker smiled and took a sip of his whiskey. It was smooth and warm. McAdams laid two pictures on the bar top. Delilah Oakham and Yvette Jones, respectively. Diaz mulled them over.
I've never seen this one.
He slid Yvette's photograph over the bar top back to Decker.
But I do remember her.
I had moved here around 2 years before she disappeared. I remember thinking that crime can happen even in a small town. But then I came to understand the way college towns work. The colleges are contained entities that have nothing to do with the town. They are all about placating the rich kids. That's not to say we don't card. Of course we do, and if the ID is obviously fake, we'll call them on it. But let me tell you, there are lots of good fakes out there. It isn't up to me to pore over every detail of every state driver's license, Decker said. We're not interested in fake IDs, Mr. Diaz.
This is all about the Bogat thing.
Yes. Okay, gotcha. Diaz looked at the photograph of Delilah Oakham. This is the girl who went missing about 3 years ago. I don't remember if I knew her from the bar or if I just remember seeing her face on flyers. They were plastered all over town.
There were several copies of the flyer in the case files, a full-face colored snapshot with the caption, "Have you seen this girl?" Underneath the caption was the contact information. Decker said, "Can you recall anything about her?"
"Just that she went missing. Some kids are always disappearing for a day or two, but usually they come back."
McAdams had downed half his whiskey.
"Tell me about those kids."
"Just that I overhear talk. Something along the lines of, where the hell did Ashley go over the weekend? Then you find out Ashley had a bender and was drying out in some frat house after drinking herself blind and getting banged by guys she didn't even know."
"Poor Ashley," Rena said.
He turned to her and blushed.
"Pardon my language."
"Was that the case with Delilah Oakham?" Decker asked.
"I don't remember the details of her disappearance."
"How old was she?"
19.
"Yeah, she looks it. I definitely would have carded her and given her driver's license a good once-over, so I must have remembered her from the flyers.
What happened to her?"
"She had a fight with her boyfriend at a party and walked out. That was the last anyone saw of her."
"Typical,"
Diaz said.
"I see it here all the time at the bar. The guy gets drunk and the girl gets disgusted and stomps out. I tell the guy, don't let her walk alone. It's dark outside. It's late. The guys are almost always tossed themselves."
"Do you like what you do, Mr. Diaz?" McAdams said.
"Yeah, actually I do. Rich kids give good tips and you meet some interesting people. Like you. Never would have taken you for a cop."
"What does he look like?" Decker pointed to McAdams.
"A grad student. A rich grad student. The coat is the giveaway. We get our fair share of rich people. This is an acceptable bar, and the kids bring in their parents to show them off to me. I make a point of being nice. Not just for the big tips, but I've dropped hints about wanting to open my own place in a bigger city."
"New York?" McAdams said.
New York or Boston. In the meantime, I'm still here. Maybe one day.
He looked at Decker.
Anything else?
Yes, actually. Decker showed him the photo of Erin Young, the cashier who went missing between Yvette and Pettigrew, and laid it on the table.
That's Erin. She worked here for a year. I was stunned when I saw her flyers.
Erin worked with you here at the College Grill? Decker asked.
Not as a bartender, as a waitress.
We were told she worked as a cashier for a local convenience mart.
After she left here, yeah.
Why did she leave her job? Decker asked. Surely it paid better than working as a cashier for Circle M.
I don't like to speak ill of the dead, if she's even dead. Anyway, she was caught with her hands in the till. I noticed that the register wasn't matching the receipts, and I pressed her on it. Eventually, she fessed up. She begged me not to report her. She had fallen on hard times, and jobs were scarce. I told her I wouldn't say anything, but she had to leave. When she got a job as a cashier, I debated telling the owner of the Circle M, but then she disappeared, and I thought, what was the point?
Decker was annoyed. I've read her files. You never contacted the police after she went missing.
What for? She hadn't worked here for a while. I'm sure she knew dozens of people who didn't contact the police.
Yes, but those people didn't catch her stealing. You did. What if she was stealing from her current boss, and he wasn't as nice about it as you were?
Meaning, she's missing, isn't she?
You think Derek Kinney had something to do with it?
He made a face. He might have fired her, but come on. He's been around here for years. Does Erin have something to do with Bogat?
Everything is still being investigated.
Well, then maybe you want to talk to Derek Kinney.
Crossed my mind, Diaz, Decker said. Take a look at this guy. Out came a photo of Lawrence Pettigrew.
Him, I remember, Diaz said. The cross-dresser. Really bright guy. He was underage. I never served him anything stronger than espresso coffee. We talked politics all the time.
He looked at Decker.
I didn't know he disappeared. Never saw any flyers.
He dropped out of college and moved to Manhattan, McAdams said. One day he came up to visit the colleges, and that was the last anyone has ever seen of him.
Wow, that's freaky. When was this?
5 years ago, before Erin Young disappeared, Decker said. Tell me about him.
I told you. Bright, crazy, gay guy. Real flamboyant.
But smart, Rena added.
Real smart, and a good tipper. Lots of gay people are big tippers. The order of generosity is gay men, straight men, lesbians, and straight women. Especially straight women who get pissed with friends.
He cocked his head in the direction of the three young women at the end of the bar who were in the process of trying to exit with dignity. The two of the less drunk girls were supporting the third, Diaz said.
Good night, ladies.
They grunted something in return. Diaz scurried to the end of the bar and picked up $75 in cash.
To prove my point, their total bill was $72.40. I get $2.60 for serving them for the last 3 hours.
Rena took Decker's wallet from her purse and pulled out a 50. She laid it on the bar top.
Keep the change, Diaz said. You don't even know what your bill is.
I know it's a lot less than $50, Rena said. Not all women are misers, and we're not all spendthrifts either. Like guys, we run the gamut, Decker said. Notice how she proves a point by taking my money out of my wallet.
Excuse me, it's our money, Decker laughed.
Of course, dear, I was just joking.
The way I figure, half of it is morally mine as your wife, and the other half is actually mine since we were married in California, which has community property. So two halves make a whole. That means that in reality, our money is all mine.
Decker scrunched up his face.
But I could say the same thing.
But you didn't, and I did. First come, first serve.
She pushed the money at Diaz.
Enjoy.
You snookered me, Decker said to Rena.
That's what you get for marrying a math major.
Chapter 18. Driving home, Decker said,
I'll drop you off at home. I'm going back to the station house.
Why? Rena said. What's up?
I'm thinking about Erin Young. I've been assuming she had nothing to do with the others since she wasn't a college student. But maybe she's connected.
You think she's buried at Bogart Trail? McAdams said.
I don't know. But even if we don't find her body, I think she may be involved. She worked in a place where college students hang. Maybe our killer noticed her. I need to reread her files.
Can I make a copy for myself? McAdams said.
Why?
I can review her file when I get back to school. That way you can concentrate on the bodies we do have.
No, no. It's one thing to take them to my house. It's another to take them out of Greenbury. What if they're stolen?
Unlikely, but I do have a safe in my apartment.
Decker relented. Call up Kevin and see if he can pull them out of the cage. See how many boxes there are.
McAdams took out the phone.
Sure.
Rena said, It's out of the way to take me home. Besides, I can make copies while you two read, she smiled. As a matter of fact, I can read through them myself and let you know what I think.
Decker shrugged. Okay.
Rena was shocked.
Okay?
Sure, this isn't LAPD. I could use the help.
McAdams hung up.
Kevin's not at the station house right now. He said he'd be glad to come back and pull them from the cage in a half hour when he's finished watching Roman Gladiator. It's smack in the middle of the fight scene between Flavius and the lion.
No spoilers, please, Rena said. I'm streaming the show.
I couldn't spoil it because I don't know how it turns out. I have no idea where I am in the series.
Where are you at?
Nero has just caught Flavius and is demanding the return of Octavia Portia, but Flavius has a plan for escape.
You're at least 3 episodes behind.
So I guess if Flavius is fighting in the lion's den, he doesn't escape.
You'll have to watch it and find out, Rena said. I would have never guessed you as a Roman Gladiator fan.
I got hooked on it last year at school.
Tell this guy how good it is, Rena said. He still won't watch it with me.
I just don't want to come in the middle of a series, Decker said. With real bodies piling up, I don't have a lot of time to watch a stupid TV show.
It's not stupid, Rena crossed her arms.
Well, it is sort of stupid, but it's very addictive. Maybe you could use something to take your mind off reality for an hour.
Thank you for your concern, but that's why I tinker with my car. At least when I change the oil, I feel I've done something.
Besides, get the garage floor dirty.
That's what garage floors are for. They aren't supposed to be white and shiny. They're supposed to look like someone has done something besides passively watch a bunch of overpaid actors with coiffed hair pretend to be Roman warriors.
Well, aren't you just above the fray?
You know what? Maybe I should drop you off at home.
Fine, suit yourself.
The car went silent.
McAdams said, Are you guys really in a fight?
When neither Decker nor Rena answered, he said,
I mean, seriously? Over a TV show?
He was met with more silence.
Peter, you just passed the station house. Let's get the boxes and start copying the files. There's no sense wasting time taking Rena home when we can use her help. Turn the car around and let's go back to Plan A, all right?
Wordlessly, Decker made a U-turn and headed for the station house parking lot. Shaking his head, McAdams said,
It's a sad state of affairs when I have to be the adult around here.
As Rena worked at the copy machine,
Decker took the warm duplicate pages from the tray and began to scour through Aaron Young's file. McAdams was updating the list of intersecting people he had originally taken from the files of Pettigrew, Yvette Jones, and Delilah Oakham. They worked in a precise but cold harmony, attentive to the job and civil to one another. Decker's cell rang. Sheila Noem introduced herself as the medical examiner who performed the autopsies on the bones of Yvette Jones and Delilah Oakham. She said, "There is only so much you can do once the soft tissue is gone. Anything will be helpful. That's the problem. I can't tell you anything. With Pettigrew, there was a big dent in his skull. With the girls, unfortunately, there isn't anything definitive. If these were bones from 200 years ago on a family burial plot, you'd assume natural death. But given the context, we know something went very wrong. There's nothing in the bones to suggest that the victims died from gunshot or blunt force trauma. And there were no cut marks in the bone, either in green bone perimortem or white bone postmortem. Now, they could have been stabbed in the neck or the leg, caught the carotid or femoral artery and bled out, but there weren't any cut marks in any of the bones I examined. What about the hyoid? Decker asked. They were broken in all three bodies. The girls could have died from strangulation. So could have Pettigrew. But you have to remember that it's a thin bone, and there were other broken bones in the body. Fingers, toes, the orbits, and the septum. It could be regular erosion of the bone, or maybe the body was dragged. We don't know, because the eyes have disintegrated. It also could have been suffocation or poison. We can test the bones and the hair for arsenic and heavy metals. But if it was an OD, it's unlikely that we'll find traces in hair or bones. I'd like to tell you more. I'm sure you'd like to have more. What can we do? It's fine. Thanks for the information. When can you deliver the report? You can either pick up a copy at my office, or I can mail it to you with the photographs tomorrow, which will take God only knows how long. I can also email you the text now and send you the photographs in snail mail. The photos don't reproduce. Not well, no. Then I'll pick up the report tomorrow. But if you could email me the text tonight, that would be helpful. Are you working on the cases now? I am. On Sunday? Crime doesn't take the weekend off. Dedicated or bored? Truthfully, maybe a bit of both. Decker hung up the phone and went back to his reading. Aaron Young had been working for the Circle M 24-hour market, and the night she disappeared was completely unremarkable. It was a warm spring evening bordering on hot and humid. The change of shift was 11:30 at night. She had left the market wearing jeans, a white wife-beater tank top, and sandals, appropriate dress considering the AC in the mart was malfunctioning. There was no indication that she was going anywhere other than home, an apartment she shared with a friend. Since then, no one had heard boo from her. Decker sorted through her photographs. They presented a living, breathing human being. Round face, short blonde hair, small freckled nose, and blue eyes. She might have been described as pixie-ish had she been a little younger and less tired-looking. There were blue and black shadows under her eyes, the mark of hard living. He leaned back and let out a sigh. "We're going about this half-assed." McAdams looked up from the desktop, a highlighter in his hand. Rena stopped photocopying, she said.
What do you suggest?
We start from the very beginning. I want to interview each victim's immediate circle and then start moving outward. In each case, since family wasn't around when they disappeared, I want to talk to those who were closest to them in school. Friends, boyfriends, roommates, classmates, and teachers.
You said you thought that all three cases were related because all three were in the same burial site, McAdams said. Did you change your mind about that?
No.
So why would you want to interview roommates and boyfriends of Yvette Jones, for instance, when they weren't even in town when Delilah Oakham went missing?
Because I want to know each victim individually.
I understand your need to be thorough, but why don't we interview the people on the list first and then go back and interview everyone else?
Depending on how many people Radar can spare, we can do it simultaneously, Decker answered. I'll start with Yvette Jones because she's the oldest case. I'll also do Erin Young because she's an outlier. You're starting school soon. Once you leave, I'll put Kevin on Lawrence Pettigrew and Ben on Delilah Oakham.
I can probably come down weekends and help you out.
Only if it's convenient.
I've been thinking about Erin Young, Rena said. Is it possible that she was the lucky one who made it out alive?
Decker said. Tell me why you think she's still alive.
I'm just thinking that if Erin was attacked, she was walking home late at night, what if she managed to escape and decided to disappear rather than go to the police? From what Diaz said, she was a thief. Could be she was hesitant about contacting them. Plus, she didn't seem to have anything tying her to the community.
Her mother still lives here, Decker said.
Yes, and that brings us to another point. If Erin is still alive, maybe she has been in contact with her mother.
The other bodies aren't going anywhere. Decker shrugged. I'll set something up with Erin's mother for tomorrow, McAdams said.
I'll come with you.
That'll work. Decker looked at Rena. So you think she's tied in with Bogat?
Just a gut feeling I have.
For what it's worth, I agree with your gut.
It's worth a lot. Thank you for not dismissing me out of hand.
I wouldn't do that, no matter how mad I was.
Are you mad?
No, I'm not. Are you mad?
No,
McAdams said. So you two are okay?
Of course we're okay,
Rena was offended.
We're not children. We're not even college students who can't handle microaggressions without falling apart.
Decker laughed. Even so, I'm sorry if I was microaggressive-ish. I want you to feel safe in your environment.
Duly noted.
You know, I really work hard not to make a mess on the garage floor.
I know. But you are gone a lot, so when you have some free time, it wouldn't hurt for you to watch a half hour of TV with me before you go off on your own thing.
We watch TV together all the time. Just going through Midsummer Murders is going to take another decade.
Sometimes I'd like to watch something other than sports or a cop show.
I thought you liked cop shows.
I do like cop shows, and I like sports, but I also like Roman Gladiator, and you should watch it with me because I don't ask much of you.
Duly noted. Decker managed a brief smile. Sorry.
Sorry, too.
Aw, you're all made up, McAdams said. How sweet.
You know, McAdams, Decker said. I can turn my aggression toward you on a moment's notice, and believe me, there will be nothing at all micro about it.
Chapter 19. The bungalow was on a rutted lane surrounded by woods. With shorter days and cooler nights, the forest was on the cusp of fall, the leaves turning gold, crimson, plum, and russet. The drivable pathway ended about 100 yards from the house. There was a 20-year-old black Ford pickup off to the side, and Decker parked next to it. He and McAdams got out and walked the remaining distance to the small one-story structure that, up close, was more boards nailed to a frame than actual house. The steps to the front door were pockmarked, and the windows were panes of soot. At 8 in the morning, it was chilly and dank and a thoroughly gloomy place, like an evil cottage in a Grimm's fairy tale. Decker knocked on the front door, a piece of splintering board, and the woman who answered was in a brown housecoat. She appeared to be in her 60s with a tired face, damaged bleached blonde hair, dark eyes rimmed with dark circles, and a frown for a mouth.
"Corrine Young?" Decker asked.
"Who else?"
She stared at them as she lit a cigarette, the source of her husky voice.
"Come in."
The living room was spare and tidy. No couches, just a few mismatched chairs next to a couple of mismatched end tables. No overhead lighting, but plenty of lamps, which was good because the interior was dark. She motioned them to a dinette table surrounded by four folding chairs. She looked around.
"You want some coffee? I'm making a fresh pot."
"Thanks, sure.
What about you?"
She was looking at McAdams.
"Coffee would be great, Mrs. Young."
There was a dazed expression on her face.
"You can call me Corrine, by the way."
"Thank you."
Decker surveyed the room after Corrine left. There was a paper bag behind the front door that held three empty bottles of vodka. To McAdams, he mimed a person drinking with his hands. Then they both sat at the dinette table and waited for Corrine to bring in the coffee. The mugs looked clean and the milk was fresh. She sat down with a steaming cup in her hand. She placed it on the tabletop and then rubbed her covered arms.
"You have news for me?"
"As I told you over the phone, we found some human bones at Bogat Trail. The three bodies have been identified and they're not your daughter, Erin. But with the discovery, we are delving into all the reported disappearances from the area within the last 10 years. Corrine picked up the coffee mug and let the steam run over her face. She remained silent. Decker said, "Have you heard from your daughter at all?"
"If I did, I would have told you over the phone."
"I had to ask. Corrine, it would be helpful for me if you could take me back to the day when your daughter disappeared."
"I didn't even know she disappeared until about a week later."
Corrine put the mug down without drinking. "Erin didn't live here with me. She moved out when she turned 16. Don't blame her. My ex was a brute. He never touched her. I would have killed him if he did. But that don't mean she never saw us fight." She paused. "Real bad fights. He was a mean drunk."
"What is his name?"
"His name was Richard Pellegrino. He died 10 years ago. Erin didn't go to the funeral." "So he was out of the picture before Erin disappeared.
Unless you believe in reincarnation, that would be the truth."
She said, "Drink your coffee before it gets cold." Decker took a sip.
"Good coffee."
"My own blend of beans. I get them at the local farmer's market, although where they get coffee beans is beyond my ken. I thought coffee grew in the tropics."
"It does,"
McAdams said. "So how do they get beans at farmers' markets?"
"Beats me."
Decker knew that Corrine was skirting around the issue, so he waited for her to settle back down. "Were there any other brutes in your life after Richard died?"
"You have men in your life, you have some brutes."
"Could they have had something to do with Erin's disappearance?" Corrine shook her head.
"Nope."
"You're sure about that?"
"Yep. You can go down that road, but you'll hit dead ends."
"Why are you so sure?"
"Because once she left the house, she didn't look back."
"You were estranged from her?" Corrine took a drag on her cigarette.
"No, we'd talk on the phone maybe once a week. That's why I didn't know she was gone until about a week later."
"How often did you see her?"
"Not often. When she was in between jobs,